Since 1981, Justin has been producing world-class Bordeaux-style wines from Paso Robles on the California Central Coast. As a pioneer of the region, Justin Wines helped put Paso Robles on the winemaking map. The Justin team believes the wine should be exceptional in every aspect, which is why they use boutique winemaking practices like hand harvesting and hand sorting. With a rich history of accolades, Justin is proud to produce exceptional wines and hold the title of America's number one luxury Cabernet. Whether you're a first-time wine drinker or a seasoned aficionado, Justin has the perfect wine for every occasion. Visit justinwine.com and enter promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off your order. Justin Wines also makes the perfect holiday gifts for clients, colleagues, friends, or family. Don't miss out. Visit justinwine.com and use the promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off for a limited time. Welcome to Entrepreneurs the Playbook, and I am in all places, Rapid City, South Dakota, and I feel like I came home because that's the way Ray Haspin, CEO and co-founder of Property Meld, makes everybody feel. Welcome to the Playbook, Ray.
Thank you so much. As I mentioned to you, this is a super privilege to be on this with you. And so thank you. Thanks for making today.
Well, I share the experience and the same gratitude because I can't tell you after 1900 and some episodes of the Playbook, I still feel so grateful that I get to have an MBA in the day, sit down and try to extract wisdom from great leaders like yourself. And proof of that pudding is we're here at the MX Maintenance Summit Conference here in South Dakota, and nobody's from South Dakota that came here. And there's 400 people. That is a neighborhood of people. They're a frequency of people, and every one of them has the same thing to say about your team, which means to me that I have a great leader. And when people talk about championship teams, they talk about the stars of the team and the teammates, but very rarely do they talk about the leader of the team. And what would you rather these 400 people acknowledge, the team like they have, or you as the leader?
Well, there's the reality. I think the whole thing is, and I make this joke, like we've got such a top tier group that put this together. Our marketing team's insane. Like I get blown away of how little and incompetent I can be rolling into this. Like I have a slot of 1 hour that my job is to like go up and do a thing. And everything else out of the 3.5 days that we have here is all the work that other people have done, inspired, thought through. And so I can't be anything but proud that we have a team that executes like this. So I don't get to take any of the credit. Even if I tried to, everybody would be able to sniff it out because clearly this guy has no clue what's going on the rest of the show. So,
but what you do know was bringing the initial 30-some people here. This is the fourth annual MX Maintenance Summit. And your first one, I'm sure, didn't have 400 people in Rapid City, South Dakota. When you brought together the first 30-some people for the first summit, what was your vision?
So there was like a point, I think our first one was like 32 people that we actually had come. And we actually had more employees than attendees there. And so I remember this moment where we were like, we can't tell in the room who's an employee because then everybody's going to know that there's nobody here. So that was the first one. And, but I think the whole thing is like, is I think you're kind of, your mission to add value or bring joy to the people that you have, and you have the numerical amount you're looking at, like in that micro moment, it was almost like, how do we make this such a compelling experience that they're at least going to go tell their friends and go dish that out in the world? And so that became all of it, was to just introduce the energy into that group. And fortunately, it was enough that the next year, I think we had like, I think like 80 attendees. And then the year after that, we had like 150. And so the joke is, marketing hates when I say it, but like we're on the double, double, double route, you know, but yeah. It started off very, very small.
And part of the value is that people actually take away pragmatic, practical, quantitative value
a lot of times when we go to different summits in different places, the value that we get is experiential. It may be business development. It may be fun, but very rarely do we have the experiential, the business development, the fun, plus actual quantitative value. Where I sat in on a few sessions already, and obviously I do some real estate, and we have property managers and maintenance, and I always say I won't buy a property. There's only two things I need. One, I won't buy a property that I have to sell ever. So I'm in a position, my timing, risk tolerance, I only buy things that I can hold for life because that gives me options. And then two, I have to have the appropriate maintenance and management already in place, or I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to take that risk because both of those guarantee me success. In the few sessions that I've been in, I have quantitatively received more value than I ever have for speaking because some of the just list on a screen, the big screen, I'm like, why did I ever think of that? That's like genius. How much of a meld is between the experiential business development fun, and your team makes it fun, but also those quantitative nuggets that can change, give you a faster doubling of your income?
You know, I think the big thing that I admire when you talk, like you talk about the destination, like people are on their destination, their divine destination. So I think in like that comes down to smaller versions, even in business and maintenance, is like constantly keep painting where the end is going and where we're at in that. And so I think like part of what we do is we try to understand where property maintenance is going, how it's going to better returns, create better resident experiences, all that. Like we do have to kind of like paint the end first. And then what's really fun is once everybody buys into that, then playing color inside the lines is a lot more enjoyable. So you think about that quantitative thing. It's like, okay, like I know where I'm trying to get, but I'm actually just trying to go from 0 to 1. And like it's so much easier to break down 0 to 1 while still knowing you're going for 100 to be able to do that. So it makes it a lot more of a strategic directional conversation, but I think that's actually what makes that tactical very digestible and why I'm doing it and why I'm going to go pitch to my team when I go back home that this is the way we need to do it.
Yeah, but I will tell you that 0 to 1 is harder and takes longer than 1 to 100. The majority of the time, even when we get people to ask us questions, as you heard when we were on stage, in the property meld business model, if I was going to ask you to break it down for me, the business itself as an entrepreneur, because there's businesses within businesses, and what I see, I always teach, you can't overachieve your own self-image. A lot of the different advice that's given to the maintenance and management side of it is don't limit yourself. There's so many different, you own the customer. And if you do that appropriately, whether it was clearing the snow or pest control or your own plumbing services, I mean, there's so many different opportunities. But I was looking at the other side saying, wow, Property Meld does the exact same thing. They don't really limit their self-image. You're doing a lot of things that are different and much more expansive than you planned when you started Property Meld.
Yeah, and I think like our vision, we have a vision where we see a home that's eventually going to fix itself. And so I think like you think, you know, a lot of even when you were younger, I was younger, like
even
you
when
have
I was younger, you hear that?
it was right around the
Even
same
when
it was
you,
right
you
it
know,
was
when you
right
had the
around the same
cart and
time.
buggy over here in
It was
South
right around the same time.
When they
Right
built
around the
the
same.
airport
It was
here
a couple of years.
with
I think you were a senior and I was a
the
freshman. It was an awkward time. But
Wright
like the whole thing is like we used to have to go like you need to learn how to change a tire. And like we had to learn basic
brothers.
mechanicking schools. And so if someone were to tell you know, back then be like, no, you're never there's gonna be a day you're never gonna have to work on a car. Like you're never gonna have to change a tire.
Yeah. You hook it up to a computer and it tells you what's wrong.
Yeah, and
Thanks.
so now it's like it's kind of weird. Like we have to train it. We have to tell it, but the reality is I haven't changed the tire in I don't know how long. And so we see a world where that's kind of seems unimaginable, but with the data and information and just kind of how we get there, we've got it mapped out to where the home itself starts to tell us it's going to break before it breaks through a variety of ways. And then our system actually can find ways to pick the resource, schedule it, get it all done at the lowest cost possible. And we see a home that fixes itself almost. It feels like it.
Yeah.
And so we think about just that impact that it's able to have. I think that's what, you know, that self-image of us and like what we want to live up to. is like our impact of being able to do that is almost the mission. It's almost the calling. And if we don't achieve that, then we're imagining everybody needs to still learn how to change a tire, which really sucks. And we want to be part of that change.
Since 1981, Justin has been producing world-class Bordeaux-style wines from Paso Robles on the California Central Coast. As a pioneer of the region, Justin Wines helped put Paso Robles on the winemaking map. The Justin team believes the wine should be exceptional in every aspect, which is why they use boutique winemaking practices like hand harvesting and hand sorting. With a rich history of accolades, Justin is proud to produce exceptional wines and hold the title of America's number one luxury Cabernet. Whether you're a first-time wine drinker or a seasoned aficionado, Justin has the perfect wine for every occasion. Visit justinwine.com and enter promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off your order. Justin Wines also makes the perfect holiday gifts for clients, colleagues, friends, or family. Don't miss out. Visit justinwine.com and use the promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off for a limited time.
One of the difficulties I've had in my career is that as a visionary, someone who sees things, as I got into the internet pre-chasm, I got into middleware pre-chasm, I got into convergence data hardware with the first smartphone pre-chasm. Being early and having a vision has dangers set to it, because take IVR, which is voice recognition. When 1992, when I was working first in the internet, they had Dragon Dictate, and they said that you would be able to speak into your, and you could, but it was so cumbersome. Nobody used IVR. And even as short as 5 years ago, a lot of the answering, it cost more customers than it helped. And we're finally getting to a place where, you know, geez, with AI, voice is incredibly powerful. When I'm thinking about the smart home, which I've heard about for years, a home that tells you, hey, the light bulb needs to be changed, and then, you know, Amazon's sending it right there. And if it's something more difficult, the person's getting it with in hours, right? I'm old, like you said, but it still blows my mind. The other day, I saw like a cool car vacuum, and I ordered it, and within 2 hours on a Sunday, it was at my door. That would have been literally impossible in my mind. When you're trying to time this vision, I always like to put people on the spot as far as how do you deal with allocating resources to the future vision that you aren't certain about how much time that's going to take, comparatively to let's deal with the issues of today, like, you know, tenants in an apartment building don't like 3 inches of snow, so we need to make sure that we get rid of all those complaints.
So it's a good one. Internally in the company, and it's not public, we call it the stairway to heaven. So the idea is you have to break apart like the individual instances or the pieces you have to do before you get there. And kind of like a self-driving car, right? Like you have to get incrementally, before we have autonomous driving vehicles, we first have to have something that regulates speed. We have to have something that indicates crashes ahead. We have to have lane change, staying in lane. And so you can actually see the technology rolling out that's happening in a lot of the safety that we're, you know, instituting, but you're actually watching the progress of autonomous driving vehicles if you're looking at it in pieces like that. So for us, we have what's called our stairway to heaven. And so the idea is about there's the next step we're working on that's marching towards that. Is that within shot? Is that hard? And then if you have that, how big is the next chunk? And so for us, if you were to put a time frame on it, I would say a very realistic chance that, and I'll even correct it, I don't even think the hardware itself, we're going to be to a point where that in 10 years, every home will tattletale on itself and be like, oh, the refrigerator's going out. The average furnace and air conditioner lasts 25, 30 years. Nobody's going to just change them out. They're very expensive. So you have to use data and making models to do predictions. And so I think the world in which we can start predicting of when things should be replaced before they even fail, I could see that happening in the next 4 years, to where you could just start proactively doing it. So instead of waking up one day and you're like, gee, it's really hot in this house, how weird would it be if it's like, hey, Mr. Hespin, it's February, air conditioners are dirt cheap, and yours is going to be needs to be replaced in the next 2 years. And we've got data to prove why that is and why it's actually cheaper to do it now. That's a lot shorter than I think a lot of us would expect.
Yeah, and I think there's also the economy of budgeting as well. So I think in the aspect of a four-year range, it'd be nice to know, hey, they're inexpensive right now, but you have 2 years. So instead of, oh my gosh, I need $7,000.
Yeah.
It's now, we also could bring a financing company in to say, look, we have these different opportunities to save the $7,000. Mm. You can buy it now, or let's put into a air conditioning savings account for the next 6 months and put $1,000 a month in there. And so there's a lot of inherent value
yeah.
that people with vision, they're playing chess, not checkers.
Yeah. And I think you're already seeing, like, you're calling out the next thing you can do with that.
Right.
That would just make it to where home ownership is not a burden. Oh my goodness, the air conditioning failed. It's like, no, I've been putting $120 away for the month for the last 2 years. I'm here. Right. I'm ready for it.
Exactly.
What a beautiful difference in home ownership.
Or because those are things that wreck families, and then you have a greater value because we, in growing up in a family where things breaking down was a major
yeah.
problem. And I think we see that still today. And I have great empathy for people when things happen mm-hmm. that they don't want to happen and mm-hmm. they just couldn't afford to prepare for them happening.
Yeah.
So there's a variety of great things ahead of us. Now, to that respect, you're building a community.
Mm-hmm.
That's really your business is building a community. If you were going to depict the culture of the community that you best would love to build, what were some of the characteristics that you're still looking at when you're building this community, an elevated frequency, a neighborhood that I really enjoy visiting?
So I'm from the Midwest as well. So I think
that's why we get along.
Yeah, it is. And I'll tell
we
you,
we like the same thing.
It is. We're technically in the Midwest. I have buddies from Ohio. It's like we're on the eastern and western parts of the Midwest.
Right.
But I think one of the things that I very much remember one time, I was walking along, and I had left my corporate job, and I was going to start a business in entrepreneurship, and I had this one gentleman who walked with me, and I'm talking about raising money to like start this software company, Property Mode. And the guy looked at me, and he's like, with complete compassion, he said, listen, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but with your degree, your background, where you went to school, nobody will give you money. And I was thinking about that, and I'm way too bullheaded to accept that answer. And I think it was like, it was a great chip on the shoulder. But I think the big thing is like when you have people that have the same like core abilities and skill sets that I have and just haven't been given a chance, a lot of the times what a community needs sometimes is just a mild amount of a lighthouse to be like, obviously it can be done. And so if you can do that, and our leaders at Property Meld that have grown so much, we call it graduate Property Meld University whenever that happens, hopefully not too long, soon. They go out and just there's an emboldenment of like what can be done. And you take what kind of that mindset in the entrepreneurial community, job creation, technology, all that sort of stuff, goes from 10 years ago of your background, your grew up, your degree, nobody will give you money to, this is a very obvious place that is great to start a business. And so I think that's what a lot of us are really rallied around. A lot of people that are at our company weren't given a shot, and it is a beautiful thing. And so we want to change that. It's fun to have the chip on the shoulder, but just the emboldenedness of being able to do great things out of smaller communities.
It's really interesting because I'm always attracted to people like that.
Mm.
And whether it was in sports, you know, I still work closely with kind of the Ray Haspin of football, which would be Austin Eckler. Right, who is the sixth man on the depth chart
yeah.
who comes in and going, you went to some Division II school in Denver, right. You know, you don't belong here, you'll never make it here, and, you know, ends yeah. up being one of the best, and he's a lighthouse to so many other yeah. kids that are in a situation where nobody believes in them, mm-hmm. where people laugh at you, scoff at you, and make fun of you,
mm-hmm.
and then eventually not only do they applaud you, but you're capable of elevating others and liberating yeah. their belief in themselves. In that respect, I talk about limiting your own self-image.
Mm.
And I always was wondering, why are they in South Dakota still? You know, there's so much money in the Silicon Valley with a company like yeah. this. And I'm sure you had a lot of pressure from the early days of moving.
Yeah.
And yet, not only are you here and thriving, but people are coming here to be with you.
Yeah.
Hundreds, and it's going to double at least next year. And hopefully I'll be able to witness that because I love this community. In order to liberate others with that light, what are, you know, for you, some of your core beliefs that you think you can convey to your children and to your community about limiting your own self-image, whether it be about money, business, personal, athletics, whatever it may be?
Yeah, and I'll even tell you. So I think as human beings, my observation is we're really good at pivoting away from things that are bad, but sometimes we're really bad at recognizing the great things that we were given and like, how do you just keep doing that? So I grew up with a really strong mother figure and I grew up with a great strong father figure as well. And if there were two things that I was like, what did my parents do that was absolutely critical for my success? It was like, one, they instilled so much belief in me that even when I had that conversation on the street, it had a different reaction to me than it might a lot of people. And that was what my parents did, like yeah. just instilled it, my mom very particularly. And the second one is just how to work insanely hard when you needed to. And we were talking about dads and my father, you know, great, great stoic guy. And one time he was apologized to me that he didn't spend the amount of time that he meant to with me. And I was like, but dad, like you showed me what I needed to do in those moments. And so as I take like those things, of course, we'd always a couple of widgets a little bit here. But I remind my parents, they did a phenomenal job. Like they won, they had five kids. None of us are on drugs. Right. We're all provided, like you won the lottery. But I think for myself, those are the two things that I am like desperately trying to make sure that I carry on, because I think it was such a differentiator for me. It's like, they know that the entire world can sit there and beat them up. And it's like, no. I like, whatever, you're an idiot. I know better, right? It can sometimes be a flaw, and I know that.
Yeah.
And then the second one is like, they know how to like put in the work, just because that is a prerequisite of anything. And so those are the two.
It's funny because those two are relative to the advice that I still give my children, that inherently, as I told you, right, I didn't listen to my mom or my dad. I just watched them. And I watched the good things and the bad things. Mm-hmm. And to instill into everyone, hey, just do your best. Mm-hmm. You know, learn lessons and have fun. But to have people that are most relative to you tell you every day that they love you, they're proud of you, and they have your back.
Yeah.
You know, for me, is a core belief of self-image
yeah.
that allows us to fight not only the negative voices of others, but
yeah.
the negative voice inside, which is repetitive, unfortunately. Our subconscious, 80% of those thoughts are negative and repetitive. And
yeah.
it takes those great parents and great leaders like you to instill the positivity and the belief and the light that leads to what Property Meld is as a company. And of course, the MX Summit
yeah.
here in South Dakota. I can't wait to see the 1,000 people show up next year. The amazing.
That clip is going to be saved. We're giving that one to the marketing team.
I've already manifested it. It's all right. There's a ray of light here in South Dakota. His name is Ray Haspin. He's the CEO and co-founder of Property Meld. This is David Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.